This podcast is for mature audiences only. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to From Crime to Crime.
Hey, buddy. How's it going?
Woo-wee. It has been a while since we've been in this seat. Everything is going great. How are you?
Good. Good. It took me a while because when I came in here to record, I realized that my studio kind of morphed itself back into my closet. So...
I know. We've been gone for a while. What, like 2-3 months? Something like that?
Yeah. It feels like 8 or 10 years, but...
We'll see how long this one goes. We're either going to have too much to say or not enough. We're going to burn out quick.
Yep. Well, sorry about the long break that we took, too, guys, but Grant decided to have his baby early, and it caught us off guard a little
bit. Yeah. Woo! Absolutely. And I had nothing to do with it. My wife is an absolute superhero. And gave birth to a beautiful little boy, super healthy. Everyone's happy and healing well and everything like that. So, but yeah, I had very little to do with it. This was the most like getting an A on the group project thing that I've ever been a part of. It's awesome. You know, and Christine's doing everything. And I just kind of get her water and snacks when I can.
Yeah, that's good.
But it's been amazing. It's been super fun so far. I love it. So his name is Harvey. And yeah, we're super excited that he's around.
Anyways, well, we're all back now. We're all back to normal. So thank you for the messages that we got from you guys while we were on a break.
Yeah, thank you so much. Like, it's always very humbling and surprising when we get so many messages about, like, why we're on break or whatever. And they're usually not planned. They just kind of, life gets in the way and we just kind of fall off for a little bit. But it's super nice of everyone who reaches out and stuff. It makes us, you know, feel confident enough to get back in here and do this some more. So thank you, everybody.
So are you ready to get into this episode?
Yeah, I'm ready to get into this. Just hit the ground running. Let's jump back into this thing.
All right. Well, this episode's going to be slightly different because we're not talking about a specific crime, but more of the end of the line in the prison system, I guess. I don't really know how to explain that.
End of the line of the prison system.
Yeah.
So that's interesting because if you were to ask somebody, they would tell you it is reform. I'm sure of that, right? Like that's the end goal of it, but that is not the end result, right? Like that's, yeah, right? Like it's crazy. Our prison system is so bad.
Oh yeah. It's completely broken and a huge mess. And we don't have the time or the expertise to fix that in a 30-minute podcast episode. But I have a lot of ideas. It's just nobody will listen. So we're going to talk about something a little more interesting than how to fix it.
You are always full of ideas, if nothing else.
Yeah. But what if I told you that there was one prison in the United States that's never had an escape attempt, let alone an actual escape?
I think I would say that's probably like one of those like country club prisons that like the celebrities go to, right?
No. This facility has never even had a case of COVID.
Oh, okay. I would say that's made up and fake.
Yeah, exactly. There's right? been, yeah, it sounds made up, but there's been very few assaults on staff. There's only been one documented murder, you know, like an inmate murder in the 30 years that it's been open.
Where is this place? This doesn't sound like a typical prison.
It's in Colorado.
Fucking hippies.
Well, it's definitely not hippies. We'll get into that. But before I tell you more, I have to explain that the Federal Bureau of Prisons has 22 U.S. penitentiaries, not including all the low security institutions like you were talking about, the camps for the celebrities and stuff. Just hardcore, the real bad ones. They have 22. Yeah. And almost all of them are classified as high security, which is the highest. You know, it goes low, medium, high. But there is one in Colorado that's classified as higher than high.
Really?
Yes, it's USP Florence, USP, which stands for U.S. Penitentiary, Florence, which is Florence, Colorado, and it's called Administrative Maximum.
Oh.
It's the only federal maximum security prison in the country.
Oh, wow. So who goes there? I mean, we hear of San Quentin, we hear of Cochrane. I don't know, I could probably go on with some other ones if I could think of them, but
those are
we
state hear of prisons.
All right.
These are federal prisons. So this one has a couple of nicknames. Mostly it's called ADX, which is short for Administrative Maximum, or ADX Florence, Florence Supermax, or the Alcatraz of the Rockies.
Wow, I've never heard of this.
Yeah, and the reason that they call it that is because there's only been 3 maximum security federal prisons in the history of the United States federal prison system. And Alcatraz was the first one.
And that one was on an island. It didn't work out. So they're like, let's put them up as high as we can get them.
Kind of. So kind of exactly right. So they wanted a place that they could send like the worst of the worst, not just the regular inmates. Like you have to earn your way to a maximum security federal prison like Alcatraz. And it's designed for inmates who've committed crimes behind bars at other prisons or are an extreme threat to national safety. Guys who are like major organized crime bosses or committed murders in prison or escaped other facilities. The hoodlums.
So like El Chapo, like would he be in one of these things?
Yes.
But is he?
Yes.
Oh, is he in this one?
Yes.
Oh, look at me knowing stuff.
But don't ruin it. We're talking about Alcatraz still right now.
Oh, sorry.
So Alcatraz was operational from 1934 to 63, so almost 30 years exactly. But in that 30 years, Alcatraz was troubled with extreme violence against the inmates and staff, but there was also 36 escape attempts.
A little more than one per year.
Yeah. 15 were caught, 8 gave up, 7 were shot and killed, 1 was confirmed to have drowned, and 5 are listed as missing and presumed drowned, which we did an episode on the 1962, right. Frank Morris and the England brothers. So after that escape, Alcatraz closed in 1963. And a lot of people think that it closed because those guys might have made it, like they might have escaped.
There's a lot of evidence saying that they might have made it, not just a lot of like assumptions, right?
Right. But it's not necessarily the reason that it was closed, because it's been reported that Alcatraz was designated to be closed long before that last escape, because it was extremely expensive to run Alcatraz. It was more than 3 times higher than other prisons because they had to ship everything onto the island, including drinking water.
Mm, wow. I didn't even think about that.
At the time, other federal prisons were like $3 an inmate to run per day, and Alcatraz was almost 11, which was like unheard of at the time.
It barely cost the government $3 or $11 now.
I know. And so at the time, that's like, it might as well have been $1 million. It was the same thing.
Right, yeah.
Besides the cost and the escapes, the 100-and-something-year-old prison was deteriorating. Even though it had only been used as a U.S. penitentiary for 30 years, it was already a facility, like already a building before that. It had been like a military prison or something. So it was like over 100 years old, that building, and it was deteriorating in the salty air. And it was going to cost millions of dollars to repair. So it was cheaper for them to build a new maximum security federal prison somewhere else. So that's when Marion is born, which is a federal prison in Marion, Illinois that opened in 1963, the same year that they closed Alcatraz. And so naturally they turned that into the new maximum security because it was the newest of the prisons. So they're like, let's just use that. But for the first 16 years, technically, we didn't have a maximum security federal prison, only high security ones like Leavenworth, and even Marion was high security, but it wasn't max until 1979.
What was the cause to make that go to maximum?
Because they needed somewhere to send the really bad guys, the guys who committed crimes in other federal prisons, and there was no consequences because they were already, most of them were already in prison for life sentences. So what was to keep them from doing anything worse?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So they needed a place that was worse to send them to. Pretty much. They kind of had this idea that if they sent all the worst guys from every federal prison to one place, they could relieve the stress on the other prisons because the troublemakers were gone. Turns out that's not really how it works. And then like new guys would just be the troublemakers at the old prisons. And then now we have this really dangerous prison, but that's beside the point. Well, they figure that out. So in 1979, Marion was the first level 6 prison in the U.S. prison system. Before that, they only categorized them level 1 through 5.
Were they doing that to just like put the fear into these next guys? Like, you think 5 is bad, wait till you go to 6. And everyone's like, oh God, a whole nother level.
Yes. Yep.
I mean, how much worse can it really get, right? Like, you can only do so much.
Okay.
All right.
Well, yeah.
Prove me wrong. I mean, that's why we're here, right?
No, but that's also what they thought, so. And it went about as smoothly as Alcatraz did. You send all the worst people to one place, and it's going to be a nightmare of a place to be. Violence was just a daily. I mean, all prisons, violence is daily, but this was bad. Staff assaults, inmate assaults, just one thing after another. These guys fight with each other. They fight with the guards. The guards are fighting with them. The guards are fighting with each other. It was bad. And there was a lot of allegations of abuse by the COs from the inmates, too, which it was the 70s, so it's not like anybody was looking into that.
Right. I mean, the allegations were true.
Yeah, they weren't just, sure they were.
Like, yeah. Yeah.
I would bet money that they were probably true, but it's not like the Federal Bureau of Prisons was like, let's look into this. They were like, yeah, we don't care. It is what it is.
No, this is definitely the lawless land for a reason. Like,
yeah,
there's some shady stuff going on.
Yeah. But there was common complaints from the guards, too, that these guys, you know, a lot of them had life without parole sentences. So there was no other punishment. This was the worst prison at the end of the line. Like, this was the last place you went. So you could just kill somebody over mashed potatoes and there was, you would have the same life tomorrow as you do today. There was no consequences because in the 70s, they were like, no death penalty. Remember that whole thing? So there was nothing else they could get.
I've been told. Yeah.
Yeah. So there was nothing else they could get. So they could just kill each other and the staff over like the most menial, doesn't matter thing. Or just to look tough.
How many staff members died?
26.
Wow. That's a lot.
Yeah. Or they would just kill each other just to look tough. You know, to the like, don't fuck with me, I'll just kill people because they're scared of the other people that are in there.
Yeah, man. This is why I'm terrified to go to prison. I wouldn't make it. I'd like to think that I would, but in reality, I wouldn't. I would definitely be somebody's bitch real quick.
100%. Totally.
100%. Yeah.
You would be somebody's bitch and I would be murdered in like 2 seconds.
Oh, your mouth would get you in such trouble.
100%.
No questions asked. I would find the biggest, meanest person there and just cuddle up to them and be like, we're best friends.
Yeah, that's not me.
No, it's not. I would survive only for that reason. You would die.
Or I'd walk in and I'd be like, why does that bitch run this place? Like, what does she have that nobody else has? So
the funniest thing is like anyone who knows you, like imagines you doing like literally walking in with your smokes in your hand and your purse on your shoulder and just kind of looking around the room, hair up in a clip, just going, fuck this bitch run this place for. And it just starts. just starts right from there.
Yeah, I would be dead immediately. So anyway, that was a common complaint, though, from the guards, is that what's the difference between 2 life sentences and 18? Like, there's no difference. So by 1983, there was a guy named Tommy Silverstein, and he was from Long Beach.
Oh, what up, Snoop?
He had a pretty shitty childhood. His mom was a bitch, and his bio dad was pretty lame. His stepdad's name was Sid Silverstein, and he seemed okay, but Tommy apparently got picked on a lot because people believed he was Jewish. That was a thing back then that you would get bullied for.
For being Jewish?
Yeah.
Oh. I've never understood that, like the bullying of someone for their religion. I've never really thought that was like...
Yeah.
I've never got it.
Yeah, this is way before our time. But besides the point, people believed he was Jewish because of the Silverstein name, so apparently they would pick on him. And then he would get home and his mom would beat him. If he got beat up and he didn't fight back, his mom would beat him up and get mad at him for not fighting back. She would take him to force him to fight other kids. She was a bitch. So with this charming upbringing, he landed himself at San Quentin in 1971. And he was only 19 years old and he got sentenced there for armed robbery. Are you following along?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is where he makes ties with the Aryan Brotherhood because he's white and that's what you do.
Sure.
Kind of surprising that they took him though because his last name's Silverstein, but that's beside the point.
I mean, are there Jewish gangs in prison?
I don't think so, but I'm pretty sure the Aryan Brotherhood is like...
Oh, yeah, you're right. They're pretty anti-Jew, huh?
Yeah, yeah. So I'm just saying.
Oh.
Anyway.
Who do you hang out with then?
Well, he joined the Aryan Brotherhood. This is where he makes... ties with them, so they obviously accepted. Apparently he was more white than he was Jewish, so they let him in, I guess. I don't know. I don't know how that works.
He probably had something they wanted, you know?
Yeah,
there was probably something that they were like, we can look past that because we need whatever it is you bring to the table.
Right. So he was paroled 4 years later, and he started palling around with his biological father and a cousin, and pretty soon, he, his dad, and his cousin got pinched for an armed robbery where they made less than $11,000 total.
Oh, wow.
Split between 3 people.
Yeah, it's not even worth it.
Dude.
I mean, even for then, that's not worth it.
Yeah. So for this, he was sentenced to 15 years in federal prison, which to me feels like they robbed a bank because I don't know how else you get federal time for that.
Yeah. Let's let you rob like a federal building.
I couldn't find anywhere what he robbed, but I didn't look into that because this is more about the prisons than this story. So I didn't really get into this story too much. But he was sent to Leavenworth, Kansas, which is a federal high security prison. I mean, it's bad. It's where the bad guys go.
Right.
And in Leavenworth, he started making his bones as a member of the Aryan Brotherhood, which means you have to do bad stuff. You have to beat people up, kill people, run drugs, do what you have to like pay your dues.
Make in your bones. Wow.
That's what the prison lingo is, that I think. I mean,
that just sounds hard.
So he becomes a pretty active member by the time he's at Leavenworth. So by 1980, he was convicted of murdering a fellow inmate named Danny Atwell, who refused to be a heroin mule inside the jail for the Aryan Brotherhood.
Oh, wow.
And so for that murder, he was sentenced to life without parole in the federal prison because he killed somebody in federal prison. So he's transferred to Marion, Illinois, because by this time, Marion is the maximum security federal prison, the new Alcatraz, so they say. So he's transferred to Marion, and he spends most of the first few months he was there in the control unit, which is like the hole, you know, the shoe, whatever, where they have like barely any freedom, 23-hour day lockdowns, solitary. But by 1981, he's running amok. You know, he's in Gen Pop, he's pretty high up in the AB. And him and another Aryan Brotherhood member named Clayton Fountain were accused of killing a guy named Robert Chappelle. Robert Chappelle was a member of the DC Blacks, which is a prominent prison gang at this time.
All right, so now he's killed two people in prison. This guy, any relation to Dave Chappelle or not related at all?
No.
Oh.
I mean...
It's good to know. It's good to ask.
I didn't look into that, but I feel like every article that I read on this and every source probably would have mentioned that if he was like his cousin or something.
Yeah.
But yes, this guy is a bad dude. He's killed two people after only a couple of years in prison. And he wasn't in prison for murder. Like, he was getting out of prison at some point.
Right.
But not anymore. So in 1982, it's called the BOP, but it's the Federal Bureau of Prisons. They decided to transfer Raymond Cadillac Smith to Marion. Now, Raymond...
Cadillac.
Yeah.
That's a nice nickname.
Yeah, it's not bad. The issue with this, though, is that Cadillac Smith was the leader of the DC Blacks. See, and Tommy Silverstein and Clayton Fountain just killed that other guy who was a DC Black.
Right.
So now the leader of the DC Blacks is now in the same prison as him. And this is normal because it's maximum security. Like, they send the terrible people there, you know, the leaders of the gangs and the people who get in trouble at other prisons. But it was bad timing because Tommy was on trial for the murder of Robert Chappelle. He maintained his innocence and said he didn't do it, but he was convicted of killing Robert Chappelle and given another life without parole sentence. So when that happened, Cadillac Smith made it very clear that he was going to kill Silverstein. No bones about it. He's like, I'm going to kill that guy as soon as I get my hands on him. Because he killed one of his members.
So in this instance, when he says, I'm going to kill this guy, is he actually physically going to be the one to do it? Or there's just now a shot called on this guy's head and anyone can take him out?
I don't know the specifics, but I believe it was a personal beef. Because I think Cadillac Smith and this Robert Chappelle guy were actually related also.
Gotcha. Okay.
But normally, yes, he's a shot caller. He would just make somebody else do it. But also, I don't know if that's how it worked in the 80s. But either way, he made it very clear that as soon as the opportunity arose, he was going to kill Tommy Silverstein or have him killed. Either way, one of them was going to die.
Right. Okay.
Because nobody, including the guards, was like doing their best to keep them separated. The guards were like, fuck it, let them kill each other. Who cares?
Again, lawless land. Like anything could happen. And these people just got away with these things.
Well, in September of 1982, it did happen. Silverstein and Clayton Fountain, the same guy that helped him kill Robert, stabbed Cadillac Smith 67 times.
Oh, wow.
Not only that, but they drug his body up and down the catwalk in front of the other cells and inmates to be like, don't fuck with us. Don't tell people you're going to kill us because we'll kill you first type deal.
Holy shit. That's crazy.
Yeah. So for this killing, he got another life without parole sentence. So he's just racking him up. There's nothing, like his life doesn't change when he kills somebody. It's the same prison he was in yesterday. You know, there's no consequences.
But like he can't go to like a solitary or like anything like that isn't going to stick for him?
Well, yeah, I'm sure he got time in the hole and stuff for murdering Cadillac Smith, but they can't just send him to the hole indefinitely. That's not, I don't think at this time that was even legal.
Oh, I mean, that just seems like something that would be pretty standard for what, like how time was back then.
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure that was not an option. Like, I think he did time in the hole. I think he would get 2 weeks here and 3 weeks there when he killed somebody, but it wasn't indefinite.
Got it. Okay.
So, in September of 83, Silverstein was at odds with a guard named Merle Klutz. They just didn't like each other. Most people say that Merle Klutz was pretty tough, like, not bad, but just he didn't let them have extra things when they wanted them. And this Tommy guy, because he was just killing people, he was like a major boss because people were scared of him. So, he wanted two mattresses and three pillows, you know, and that was against the rules. So him and this guard hated each other. And Tommy started telling people he was going to kill this guard, Merle Klutz. And other inmates were like, hey, that's not a great plan. The other guards are going to kill you, for one. They're not just going to let you kill him. They're going to kill you. And if they don't kill you, they're going to torture you for the rest of your life.
Yeah, 1,000,000%. And that name too, Merle Klutz, like that sounds like a bad guard, right? Like that just sounds like somebody that like is not, does not have your best interest in mind.
Yeah, well, according to Tommy and some of the other inmates, he didn't. But according to most of the prison staff, he was just tough on everybody. Like he was fair. He wasn't corrupt or bad. He was just fair, which the inmates at the time didn't like. A lot of them got special treatment because the guards were scared of them.
Yeah.
One morning, he was being transferred from his cell to the showers by three guards.
Yeah.
So at 10:30 a.m., he's walking down the catwalk. Apparently, they weren't right next to him or right in front of him or right behind him. Apparently, there was some space. And he walked by another inmate's cell who used a homemade handcuff key to unlock Silverstein's cuffs super quick. Like he threw his hands up to the inmate's cell and the guy unlocked his cuffs and handed him a shank.
Oh, geez.
Within seconds. And Silverstein tacked 51-year-old CO Merle Klutz. The other officers that were walking with them wrangled him away from Klutz, you know, eventually, and they were also injured too. But after the dust settled, Merle Klutz was dead. And it was determined that he was stabbed over 40 times.
Ooh, wow. I was going to ask how many times. Yeah, man.
Yeah. And supposedly he was only like weeks away from retirement, which is kind of
sad.
That's
probably why he got him, right? Like, you're not going to let you go off into the sunset.
Yeah. So to top it off, later that evening, Clayton Fountain, you know, Silverstein's buddy, who he does a lot of stupid shit with.
Right.
He did the exact same thing to another CO named Robert Hoffman. So two COs murdered in one day by two different inmates in separate altercations.
But obviously both pretty highly planned. Like they were going for this.
Oh, yeah. Silverstein was eventually given another life sentence for this, but this changed shit a lot. Like you can't kill two guards in one day at the same, like they're going to
bring the hammer down.
Yeah, big time. So Marion would go on lockdown, which is where everybody's locked in their cell 23 hours a day, and they only get out 1 hour a day for exercise and a shower. So you only get to exercise for, you know, some of that time and then shower and then back to your cell.
Damn. What a bad, like, what a already bad life getting worse.
Yeah. And this 23 hours a day lockdown lasted for the next 23 years.
No way.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, I was like, I wonder how long this goes on for. Yeah. 23 years.
Yeah. They just said, fuck it. We're not doing this anymore. You get that? You can't just kill guards, dude. Like that's, especially two in one day. It's like, no, we're just going to shut the door. You're done.
Oh, man.
Tommy, though, wouldn't be here to witness this because he was immediately transferred to Atlanta because the Federal Bureau of Prisons was afraid that the guards would kill him.
Yeah.
So they transferred him to Atlanta, where his security status was upgraded to no human contact.
Look, I get that. I completely understand it. I can't really fight it, but that, it makes me sad. It does. And I know I get where we're coming from with this. I get what he's done, but no human contact, man. Like that makes me sad for him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and people warned him too. It wasn't like he just, you know, lost his mind for a second and did something bad. Like, I mean, he's killed a lot of people and people warned him, this is going to ruin your life, you know, what little life you have.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's the wrong call. I'm just saying like, that's like, I feel bad for the guy and I probably shouldn't. Yeah. I know like it's caused a lot of havoc and stuff.
You're going to feel really bad at the rest of this episode because we're getting to the bad stuff. So,
oh, we're not even there yet. Oh,
no, no,
okay.
No.
Well,
no, this is what led to where we're going. So
oh, it gets
he was
worse.
Kept awesome. In pretty strict isolation. And even once that leaned off a little bit, like he wasn't in as strict of isolation, the guards wouldn't even speak to him out of respect for Merle Klutz. So even when he did see people or they had to bring him food or do whatever, take him to the doctor or whatever they had to do, they wouldn't talk to him.
But the doctor had to talk to him, right?
Yes. So eventually there was a riot in Atlanta, the prison that he was at in Atlanta. Some Cuban refugees like took over the prison. They had some political thing they were doing. They let him out of his cell for a week. And the feds begged the Cuban refugees to release him because they were afraid that he was going to kill other COs being out of his cell, the COs that the Cuban refugees had held hostage.
I would think that he was just going to organize everybody and turn them against him for sure.
But he hadn't. But the Cubans didn't care about him anyways. They had like a totally different agenda. So they gave him to the feds. They were like, here, we don't give a shit about this guy. He's not part of our deal. And so they gave him back to the feds, and he was transferred back to Leavenworth, which is where this whole thing started to begin with. And at Leavenworth, it was no better for Tommy Silverstein. He was kept in an isolated cell in the basement of the prison, still having the human contact designation. The guards would bring him his food and stuff, but they wouldn't speak to him. They wouldn't even look at him. So he didn't have any contact with anyone except a prison psychologist and his attorney for like a pretty long time. But eventually,
that's pretty rough.
Yeah, eventually he was able to gain some privileges, like having art supplies and things like that. But there was cameras in his cell. The lights were on 24/7. The reasoning for that was they said they had to leave him on because of the cameras. But they called it supreme punishment. And it was all they could do legally to these type of offenders to make an example out of him to keep other prisoners from killing guards. Otherwise, there's no consequences.
Totally. No, I get
it. The other prisoners are just going to kill guards whenever. So they were like, we have to do something. Eventually, he would earn privileges like having the art supplies and being able to write letters and make phone calls. But he's also said in interviews more recently that they did that because they needed something to be able to take away from him. Because when he had nothing, if he didn't follow the rules or go with the program, they didn't have anything to take away from him. So he says they gave him that stuff so that they had something to take away from him when he misbehaved.
God, what a miserable existence. Like,
yeah, for a long time, too. Eventually, years later, they did allow a journalist named Pete Early in to meet him when he was writing a book about Leavenworth. And him and this Pete Early guy struck up like a correspondence that lasted years. And he eventually wrote a book solely about Silverstein's experience.
I bet. Yeah, I can see that.
It's called Thomas Silverstein, A Life of 24-Hour Isolation.
Dang. We might want to cover this case, too. I mean, I could see this being really interesting.
It's really wild. So this incident and offenders like Tommy Silverstein, who are just totally out of control and super dangerous, along with the conditions at Marion, being on 23-hour lockdown, and it's now a 30-something-year-old prison, led to the Bureau of Prisons deciding that they needed a new maximum security facility with the ability to take inmates like Tommy Silverstein and Clayton Fountain. So they came up with a plan to build a supermax facility. They called it Administrative Maximum, or ADX.
So what, like, how do they ramp up then? What takes this to the next level?
They chose Florence, Colorado. The compound itself is known as FCC, which is Federal Corrections Complex, Florence, and it has four different facilities. It has a low, a medium, and a high, and then it has ADX. And this ADX was designed for the sole purpose of housing inmates that pose the greatest threat of violence for other inmates, guards, or national security. So you don't just steal a car and get sentenced to ADX. You have to, like, go to other prisons and fuck up real bad to get there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, it's meant for people who cannot be controlled or are a huge risk to the public if they get out, like terrorists and some serial killers. Its intention was also not to house inmates for more than 3 years. So they have different levels of confinement at ADX. You're supposed to go there and earn your way down the levels until you're ready to be sent back to a regular federal high security prison. So it's meant to break you, pretty much.
Yeah, like as close to torture as we can get almost.
Yes. So it was built in 1994 and they used everything they learned from the mistakes at Marion and Alcatraz and accounted for it tenfold in this facility. It's been said that it's immaculate. There's not a speck of dust, a scuff mark on the floor. There's no graffiti. There's no broken light bulbs. It's pristine and silent. The cells are soundproof. The guard control towers are soundproof. Where the guards sit in the control centers are all soundproof. It's absolute silence.
That's pretty eerie to have like an abandoned building filled with people.
The higher level units were built specifically to limit the interaction between inmates and guards and even inmates and each other. They have no interaction with each other. And they did that because of the risk to the guards, because these are the highest risk inmates, you know, the most violent inmates. So it was specifically built so that the guards don't have to interact with the prisoners at all.
Wow.
Yeah, some of the lower level units do allow for limited inmate interaction. Like once you've worked your way down even before you're getting ready to go back to the federal prison while you're still at ADX, if you're in the lowest one, they do have some limited inmate interaction. Like they can use the cages and the rec yard at the same time so they could talk to each other through the chain link cages, or they can eat in a common dining room, but that's it.
There's a movie where that's in, and I'm not sure what movie it is, but yeah. There's a movie where they have something similar to this. It actually might be the same thing.
Yeah. Well, a lot of state prisons systems, after this was built, use this as a model for their supermax facilities, but none of them do it as well as ADX. Even human rights groups agree. Like most of the state supermaxes are like real big human rights issues, and they've toured ADX and they're like, well, I mean, it still is not good, but it's executed the best out of any of the ones that we've seen.
Shock collar. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, I never seen it. So anyway, it's an extremely controlled environment. So these cells are built out of poured concrete, and so are the beds and the desks and the stools. Everything is poured so it's seamless and immovable. The concrete bed does not move. It's in where it is.
Wow. It just, everything's just where it needs to be.
Yes. And there's a toilet and a sink in each unit, and the sinks don't have taps on them so that the inmates can't take them apart and use them to make a weapon or anything. And there's a shower in every cell. So, and that's by design so that they don't have to move them to take them to the shower facility. So each cell has a toilet and a sink, a little stool, circular stool made out of concrete, and a desk and a bed and a shower. The showers are on timers, so they can't just like take a shower whenever they want. They're on specific timers to make it to where they can't drown themselves or flood their cell. And the toilets are on auto stops if they're blocked.
Wow.
Because that's like a common thing. They plug the toilet to flood their cells so they can get out. The toilets are auto stopped if they're blocked.
This is nuts.
Yeah. The heavy steel doors have one small viewing window for the guards to look in and a slot for meals to be passed through or for the inmates to be cuffed up when they're having to leave their cells. But even behind that steel door, there's a set of steel bars, like a regular prison cell bar doors.
Oh, man.
So the inmates don't just have access to the door of their cell or the slot right. or anything.
That's crazy.
And all these doors are controlled remotely from guard control centers. They have one button in there that they can push to close all 1,400 doors in this facility at once. Like if they think there's something going on or somebody escaped or something, they have a panic button that closes every door in the whole facility.
I wonder how often that has to be used.
I don't know. Probably never, because this is pretty controlled.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. But I wonder if there have been instances.
Yeah, I don't know. But like I said, the guards mainly monitor the inmates from these control centers where there's no interaction. They're just watched on surveillance videos 24/7. There is one window in each cell that's a 4-foot long window, but it's only a couple of inches wide, so it's real skinny. It does let sunlight in, but it's specifically designed at an angle so that the inmates can only see the sky. And some cells can see a small portion of the roof of the building. But it's done that way on purpose to prevent them from knowing where in the facility they are so they can't plan an escape.
Do they get walked to their cell blindfolded then?
Well, they don't really leave their cell. They're let out
of
their...
To begin with, they just go blindfolded so they have no idea where they're even in the area?
All the corridors are interior or below ground, so they probably don't realize where they are anyway. Once they're in the facility, they probably don't realize where they are because there's no windows or anything on the interior. But they are let out of their cells for 1 hour a day once they've earned that privilege. They never know when it's going to be. It could be any time. Like, it's not a scheduled 1 hour a day. It's whenever they let them out. And they don't let them out together. They let them out one at a time to exercise.
That's crazy.
And they're put in either in those cages, like I said, if they've earned the very little inmate interaction, which it's not even they can't touch each other or anything. They're in separate cages. But mostly they're put into a pit. It's like an empty swimming pool, so they can only see the sky when they're exercising, so that they don't know where they are in the prison.
That's bonkers stuff, man.
Yeah.
This really is like torture, you know, without dropping water on their forehead.
Yeah. So in the first year, they don't really have a lot of privileges at all, but they can earn them. Like I said, if they do well and they behave and everything, they can earn their way down and sometimes out of ADX. And some of the privileges that they can earn is a 15-minute phone call once a month to an accepted person, to a screened person. You can't just call anybody. And they can also earn a TV or a radio in their cell. like a little small TV or a small radio, art supplies, etc. But it's still pretty extreme isolation. I mean, 23 hours a day in your cell.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
So it's designed to legit break their spirit. And there's some human rights groups that think technically, like, this is pretty cruel and unusual. But it's gone to court and it says no. And I mean, their spirits are kind of bad anyway. So maybe it's a good thing for some to break their spirits. I don't know.
I mean, I think you kind of have to, right? Like, you can't just keep having these, like, worst of the worst keep being the worst of the worst. I mean, and I do feel bad that they're completely locked away.
Totally. But also, some people, even like Tommy Silverstein, it's like, even when he wasn't on complete isolation or anything, the guards still wouldn't talk to him. Like, he's a shit person. So it's like, I mean, I don't know. Plus, it's not meant for long periods. It's meant to work the program and work your way out. But there is some people who will not be working down. Like, they've just been deemed to be too extreme. They have serious behavior issues or an extreme threat to national safety if they were to escape. Like terrorists. This is where we keep them.
Totally. Yeah.
Johar Sarnaev or whatever his name is, the Boston bomber kid. He's here.
Yeah.
Ramzi Youssef, the guy who did the first World Trade Center bombings. He's here. Eric Ridoff, the guy who did the Olympic Park bombings in Atlanta, the shoe bomber, the underwear bomber, Osama bin Laden's son-in-law, Al-Qaeda, ISIS, Taliban members, all those guys are here. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, was also here before he died.
I was going to ask about him.
They live on a unit called Bomber's Row.
Now, Timothy McVeigh wasn't there, right? He was in Oklahoma, wasn't he?
No, Timothy McVeigh was at this prison until they executed him.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And also his accomplice, Terry Nichols, he is still at ADX.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, call that thing Bomber's Row. Ooh.
Yeah, and this unit, Bomber's Row, is like one of the more high-controlled units at ADX. Like, they have the least amount of privileges. The only one higher than this is called Range 13.
Who's there, like El Chapo?
Yes.
Is anybody else there? I mean,
no.
Does anybody else have the pull like El Chapo does?
No. Well, that's not really what it was built for. It was built for, well, I think punishment inside ADX in case you fuck up like real bad, which I don't even know how you could, but in case you did. And for just extreme cases, it's only four cells, but it's never been full. In fact, none of ADX has ever been full.
Oh, that's a good thing.
It's never been at maximum capacity, which is like 500. It's never been... It's down to like 300 right now. But Range 13 is reserved for the worst of the worst. And it's been kind of secretive. Like, there's not a lot known about it, but I'm sure it's pretty much the same thing, just without the privileges. I'm sure they maybe don't have the TV or the radio or whatever. But the only known residence of Range 13 was Tommy Silverstein, the guy who we talked about before that killed the two guards that caused this whole fucking thing.
Right.
He was sent to ADX in 2005 when Leavenworth was downgraded to a medium security prison. He was transferred to ADX and he was on Range 13. Ramzi Youssef, the guy who did the first World Trade Center bombings, was on Range 13 for a short time. And now El Chapo. And Tommy Silverstein died back in 2019. So currently they are pretty sure El Chapo is the only one on Range 13.
Do they know why he died? Was it old age or?
Yeah, he's
pretty old, right?
Yeah, he died of heart failure, I think, or cancer. I don't remember. I think it was heart
loneliness.
Failure. Yeah, he had a girlfriend towards the end, but.
Of course. Dude, yeah. If you're in jail or on my 600-pound life, you can get chicks real easy.
I know.
It's so funny. It's crazy.
Yeah. So anyway, you could research it, and this place is known about, but nobody really talks about how intense this prison is.
No. I mean, I was looking a little bit up while we were talking and stuff, and it's a real peach, man. Like, that's a crazy place to go. Like, and you have to earn it. Like, it's just not something given to you. I mean, even El Chapo, I mean, what, he break out of prison twice or so before,
twice,
like, they sent him here?
And that's the thing is, it's super controversial. Don't get me wrong. I don't know if I stress that enough, that the human rights people are like, this is torture, which I totally don't blame them. It's definitely torture. But what else are you going to do with these people? You're going to put them in Gen Pop? They're either going to kill other people or people are going to kill them. This is probably the best place for them, for their safety and for the safety of everybody else. So it's like, I don't know.
I mean, beyond that, these guys are leaders, you know, like they.
That's the problem.
Yeah, people flock to them, mm-hmm. and they use their qualities for bad.
Yeah.
You kind of have to keep them separated so that other people don't unionize around them and start doing their bidding.
But there has been quite a few suicides at ADX, which is one of the things that the human rights people are like, yeah, you're torturing people until they decide that death is better than this. And it's like, well, I mean,
yeah. I mean, I'm not surprised.
They
right?
are. That's what I'm saying. I know that sounds really insensitive and I don't mean it to be like controversial, but they're not wrong. The human rights people are right. This is definitely a horrible place, but also these guys deserve it. So it's kind of like, I don't know which way to go on that.
Yeah. What do you do? Like, yeah. You can't let people do what they're doing.
Yeah. And if you put El Chapo in a regular high security federal prison, he's gone tomorrow afternoon.
Or he's running the entire thing. And yeah. He's gone anyway. So.
And he's gone anyway. That's what I'm saying. He's out of there. He has so much money and so much pull that there's no way he would be able to be held at a regular prison. There's just no chance.
They can't even do like that phishing thing where they like send notes to each other, huh? Because of like the steel metal doors.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they can't hear each other. They don't even know who's in the cell to them. Yeah. Soundproof. Not only soundproof, but also they get moved every 30 to 90 days. They move cells.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, because they don't want them to be able to, if they are figuring out some way to tunnel out or something, they don't want them to be able to have the time to do that.
No, man, that's gnarly.
And the other crazy thing is that Alcatraz was around for 30 years, from 34 to 63. And then Marion was the maximum security prison from 63 to 94. And then this I'm like, yeah. Oh shit, it's 2024. Are they going to build a new one? So, but this one seems to be fine.
You're going to say this one seems to be working out because what else are you going to do?
Yeah. This one seems to be pretty isolated. I mean, we just talked about the cells themselves, but the actual facility has pressure pads and lasers and attack guard dogs that roam the property all the time. They've got 12-foot high barbed wire fences, all kinds of motion sensors and literally pressure pads in the ground to like feel if somebody's walking where they shouldn't be walking. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's like, I mean, it's pretty inescapable. I mean, I don't want to like jinx it, but if El Chapo figures out a way to get out of this, then he's superhuman.
And maybe we should just let him out. If he gets out of this one, maybe he's also earned the right to just be free.
Yeah, I don't know. He's admitted to killing thousands of people. I don't know if we want him to just be free.
No, I get it. I know.
Besides indirectly killing hundreds of thousands of people with all the drugs he's funneled everywhere.
Yeah, no kidding. What a gnarly story. Like, and I think I had heard of this, but like I never really put much thought into it. Mm-hmm. So to kind of get the backstory and stuff to it, that's pretty wild stuff.
Yeah. So that's the story of ADX. Anyways, I wanted to do something that wasn't like a super long, drawn out case for you for our first recording back. Because I knew you wouldn't want to be away from Harvey for very long. So this ended up being longer than I thought it would be.
It's true, though. Like, I just always want to be around him and, like, hang out with him. And until I go back to work, I've just been like, I'm the one who's going to change diapers. I'm the one who's going to get up with him. I'm, like, as much as I can. Again, he really only wants me for very few amounts of time. It's really Christine who, like, he's looking for, which is super cute anyway, so I don't care.
Yeah.
But he's literally perfect. He's the perfect baby.
So, all right. Well, I'm going to let you go so you can go back to hugging and loving on him and FaceTiming me and showing him to me.
I know, we gotta do that. All right. Well, let's hang up here so we can answer that call.
All right, love you.
All right, love you too. Bye.
Bye.
This podcast has been a production of Orange Halo Media LLC, hosted by Grant Narica. If you enjoyed the show, please rate and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. To chat with us, go to From Crime to Crime on Instagram, From Crime to Crime on TikTok, From Crime the Number 2 Crime on Twitter, or you can visit our website at FromCrimeToCrime.com. See you next Wednesday.